This is Digital Story Podcast number 958, July 30th, 2024. Today's theme is hiking or biking for summer photo adventures. I'm Derek Story. Two popular summer activities for outdoorsy types are hiking and biking. The days are longer and the air is warmer, tailor-made for both forms of exercise. But what if we want to combine our favorite year-round hobby, photography, with these pursuits? Which is better? On today's TDS Photography Podcast, I'll take a look at the pros and cons of each. I hope you enjoy the show. Having grown up in Southern California, hiking and biking have been a part of my life since I was a kid. At first, though, it was biking, because any boy worth his salt had a set of wheels by the time he went to school. For us, a bicycle was freedom. Since parents in those days didn't think about their kids much until head counts at dinner time, boys and girls with bikes could roam the earth freely until the streetlights came on. Then I had the added bonus of growing up in a semi-rural community. So I was in Chino, Southern California, and at that time, there was about 10,000 people in that town. This was before the freeway ran through Chino. Once the freeway came, as anyone knows who has had a freeway run through their hometown, everything changes after the freeway arrives, right? Suddenly, more people come, more buildings come, more strip malls come, all that kind of stuff. But prior to the freeway, we were 10,000 folks, and there was a lot of open land in that area. There was a downtown, just like most small towns had a downtown. And there was a few things on the fringe, and then there were houses and open fields and all that stuff. So, if you had a bike, then you could ride all these different places, right? And I remember there was a store that we all loved. And it was a couple miles away from where we lived, and it was called Value Fair. Value Fair, they're not around anymore at all. But it was kind of like a Thrifty or a CVS, something like that, only even a bit more eclectic than, you know, CVS is really a drugstore that has other stuff. Value Fair just had other stuff. I mean, stuff like you go to the back of a Value Fair and they had a pet section. And I don't mean just dog collars and cat toys. I mean, there was like hamsters and goldfish. And I mean, living pets were back there. So as a kid, you know, you could go back there and, wow, look at that, look at that. Oh, the hamsters. Oh, you know, and then you're thinking, okay, how can I talk my parents into letting me have a hamster? You know, all that stuff. That's the kind of store it was. So you can imagine what a magnet it was for us when we were 8, 9, 10 years old. Not to mention, of course, they had a fantastic selection of candy bars, ice cream, all that good stuff. So in order to get there, though, it was really too far to walk. But if you had a bicycle, you could get the Value Fair and back, and your parents would never know you're gone. I mean, it was, and in fact, we had to ride through a couple fields to get there, because a lot of times we'd have like a little set of houses, and then there'd be a walnut grove, and then there'd be more houses, you know, kind of that thing, and the whole thing just sort of hooked together until you got to somewhere that was interesting, such as Value Fair. And there was always a path that went through the field. Right? Always. There's always a path that went through the field because, you know, those fields aren't just going to sit there. People are going to go through them and they always take the easiest route. So you could ride your bike, you know, on the streets and then go on the path and then navigate all the way until you got to the Mecca that was known as Value Fair. And there you could get whatever treats that you could afford based on the amount of money in your pocket, usually based on some sort of allowance system. Hang out there, chat with your friends, do all that kind of stuff, leaning against your bike, eating a Reese's peanut butter cup, and then, of course, pedaling back to make sure that you were back on your home street before the streetlights came on, because that was the big signal, right? When the streetlights came on, you had to be either in the house or at least outside the house. Otherwise, there would be a price to be paid then. If we didn't show up when the streetlights were on, then we truly would be in trouble. But otherwise, there was no cell phones, there was no air tags, there was no way to track us. It was virtually impossible to know where your kids were at any given moment, unless you kept them confined in the backyard, which no parent would ever do because we would drive them crazy. They're not going to keep us confined. That's why a lot of times, even when we were placed on restriction as kids, that restriction somehow got cut in half after a few days, because honestly, we were just driving them nuts. And they're saying, look, this is more of a punishment for us than the kids. Promise to be good and we'll set you free again. And the next thing you know, we were on our bikes and going to any number of places, friend's house, to school, to play pickup ball, whatever. Riding a bike for me is second nature. I don't even think about it any more than I think about breathing or walking. The bike just magically stays upright as I move from place to place. Even while waiting for traffic lights, I can usually balance the bike, my feet still on the pedals, nothing has to touch the ground, for a few seconds. And if the light turns green, then I can just take off again, never having to really, you know, put my feet on the ground and be in stationary position. A bike is just a natural sort of thing. Now, these days, when I ride to work, I'm traveling between 18 and 22 miles an hour. I know that because we have speedometers on our bikes now. I mean, bikes have really changed a lot. They're a lot more technologically advanced. So that's a lot of ground compared to 3 to 4 miles an hour, which is my walking speed. My office is 6.5 miles from home. So with traffic light, I can get from one place to the other in about 25 minutes. That's a nice commute. If I were to walk it, it would take 2 hours. And, you know, who's going to walk 2 hours to work unless you absolutely have to? Times would have to be pretty bad, you know, for that to happen. So you think with all of this that biking would be great for photo adventures. Well, yes and no. Let's take a look at the pros and cons of biking for photo adventures. Let's start with the pros. Well, you can cover more ground. We just talked about that. So if you're exploring somewhere like wine country up here in Sonoma County, where the locations are spread out, then a bike allows for a wider variety of photo opportunities, because you can get from one place to another, still be out in the fresh air, still be exercising, not having to get into a car, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you can have the outdoor adventure and get to a variety of locations on a bicycle. You can carry more weight. Now, personally, I prefer bike trunks to panniers. Bike trunks sit on the back rack. Panniers hang off the side. They look like saddlebags. But even a mid-size trunk can transport a decent amount of photo gear that isn't on your shoulders. And that's really nice. Plus, having bottle cages on the bike frame itself, there's your water, so you're not having to carry your water. They're there attached to the frame of the bike. So you can carry more weight with a bike and be easier on your body. And then bikes provide a variety of options depending on what you're exploring. So if you're riding on trails, you can get a mountain bike, rough surfaces with a gravel bike, or if you're going strictly asphalt, you can get a nice hybrid. Plus, now you can supplement your pedaling with an electric motor, further increasing your range and conserving your energy. And the electric component for bikes these days is a lot of fun. I'm not talking about the bikes that are like motorcycles with a throttle. I'm not talking about bikes with a throttle. I'm talking about pedal assist. I'm not a purist, even though I've grown up with bikes my whole life. But something with a throttle that goes 25 miles an hour and people ride in bike paths is a lot different than someone that's actually pedaling and then just getting a little assistance for their pedal. it just feels like that those people are riding more like bikes and less like motorcycles. A little bit of a bias I have, but as many of you who live in areas where there's a lot of bikes, we have to put up with both. And if you see a motorized vehicle coming on the sidewalk at you and the person isn't even pedaling, that's a little nerve-wracking. That's a little unnerving. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about bikes where you actually have to pedal with a motor or without a motor. So those are some serious pros for biking for your photography. But there are some cons too. And one of them is, and those of you who ride bikes will probably be familiar with this first con, which is I pass up too many shots. I don't know if this is just because I've been riding bikes my whole life, but once I get going on a bike, I don't want to stop until I reach my destination. So if I'm gliding along at 20 miles an hour and see a potential photo subject, I'll contemplate it for a few seconds and then typically just keep pedaling. In other words, I'll pass it up. And I do that time after time again. It's just like, no, I'm going so well right now. I don't want to stop. Oh, it's an okay picture anyway. And it, you know, it could be a really great picture. But that few seconds while you're whizzing by it, more times than not, at least for me, I pass it up. So I pass up way too many shots when I'm on a bicycle. And then cycling requires looking forward, not gazing at the surrounding landscape. At least it does where I ride. He who does not watch the road is doomed to disaster. Even on routes I know well, there are potholes that magically appear, debris that comes out of nowhere, and then there are, of course, cars. So when you're riding a bike, or at least when I'm riding a bike, I can't really survey the landscape that well. Every now and then, sure, you can angle your head one way, angle your head another way. But for the most part, you have to be keeping an eye on what's in front of you. Because if you hit a pothole, a sizable pothole or a big chunk of debris at 20 miles an hour, you're going to have a fall. That's just the way it is. And that's not a fall that you want to have. That really kind of ruins your whole day when that happens, right? And boy, especially if it damages, in addition to whatever damage it does to you, but if it damages your bike, and heaven forbid, our camera gear, oh my gosh. So, you know, that's definitely a con. You've got to be looking ahead, and you don't really have a chance to enjoy the beauty around you while you're cycling. Okay, let's go over to hiking now, because this is biking or hiking. Well, there's a little bit of a... Oh, no, I'll save that. I'll save that for later. Let's just go to the pros for hiking right now. So the nice thing about hiking and photography is that it's much easier to scope out the shots. And once you see them, you're actually likely to take the time to photograph them, right? So you're kind of, you know, you're just hiking along. Oh, there's a shot. Oh, I'm just going to go over there and explore that. You don't have to get off the bike. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to slow down. You don't have to hit any brakes. I'm never going that fast when I'm hiking anyway. And it's just more natural. It's just more natural to go over here, go over there, be looking around, all that kind of stuff. It's easier to scope out shots when you're hiking. Plus, photography provides natural breaks from hiking. And this is especially true if I'm trudging up a hill and I'm ready for a break. What I'll do is I'll scope out a scenic overlook and make that my goal. I'm going, okay, all I got to do is get 50 yards up and there's a nice little overlook right there. I'll get up to that. I'll take a breath. I'll take some pictures. You know, that all just goes so well. And not only do I have a chance to catch my breath, I also often get a lovely shot to boot. So it provides, you know, photography and hiking really kind of go together well. Now, another advantage is that day hiking requires less gear. There's no bike to lock up and worry about. And the odds of a flat tire are much lower with boots than with wheels. So you kind of remove a whole element of equipment, of gear that you have to worry about when you're just hiking with a little, you know, day pack in your camera gear, a bottle of water, and maybe a sandwich. And then hiking is more social than biking. So if you have friends joining you, photo buddies, on a photo walk, it's much easier to converse with them. It's more natural. You can talk while you're walking, especially when you're on flat land, you know, or even when you're going downhill. And if you're in decent shape, even going up a hill, you can still have natural conversation with your photo buddies hiking. Whereas on a bike, let's be honest, it just doesn't work that well. It's not. And also, you know, when you're talking to your buddy, especially if you look over at him a lot, let's say you go side by side on the bike, then you're back to rule one where you're not looking ahead and things can happen. Very, very bad things. In my mind, hiking is more social than biking, especially during the act itself. But there are some cons for hiking and photography. And you have to be in better shape for hiking than biking. Now, I'm not talking about competition biking and all that. And I don't want anyone who's a serious cyclist to, you know, write me a nasty gram on this. But for a casual person such as myself, going for a hike or going for a bike ride, most of the time, the hike is harder on my body, harder on my feet than biking. Right? And there's no coasting while you're hiking, but there is while you're biking. So I just think, at least for me, I have to be in better shape for hiking than biking. All my gear has to be on my person when I'm hiking. So that's another con, or at least a consideration, that you have to carry everything. That might influence how much you bring. That might influence how ambitious you are with the hike. All of that, because you have stuff on you. So not only do you have to take yourself up the hill, you have to take your gear with you. And then, of course, you can't cover as much ground hiking as you can on a bike. So what is the answer to all of this? You know, what is the solution? Well, in my opinion, bikes are best to get you to locations from point A to point B. But once you're there, I think it's best to get off the bike, lock it up, and then explore your photo ops on foot. So I'm talking about basically a hybrid model. Now, you can drive to your location, get out and hike. We do that all the time, right? All of us do that. But if you want the full outdoor experience, you want a little bit more exercise, you want a little bit more fresh air, you can also bike to your location and then hike. Do all your photography, get your pictures, get back on the bike, ride home, and then you really deserve that hot dog, that burger, maybe even, dare I say, a beer when you get back, because you have done so much more exercise than just driving, you know, to your location, taking some picture and driving home. I love the freedom of riding a bike. It's the closest thing that I've experienced to flying like a bird. And I really do feel like I'm flying sometimes on a really great biking day. I like that bikes don't pollute the atmosphere. And you can combine biking with public transportation. We have a train here in Sonoma County that's set up for bikes. You just walk the bike right on the train. They've got hooks and stuff that you can set it up. It's really easy. A lot of the buses have bike racks on them, so you can just plop your bike on the bike rack and hop on the bus. So you can combine public transportation with biking, and that's a lot of fun as well. But the one thing that I've learned over the years, that for photography itself, I have to get off the bike if I'm going to fall into a creative zone and make good pictures. Because if I don't, I just keep riding and riding and riding, because it's so much fun. I can't believe Olympus walked away from this camera. If only we had it now. And this is an article on digitalcameraworld.com. I have a link to it in the show notes. So as you can imagine, I'm gonna let you guess which camera this author is writing about. Time's up. Yes, it's the Pen F. It's the Pen F, right? So let's see what he has to say here. What is the best retro camera on the market today? The Fujifilm X100 VI, the Leica Q3, the Nikon ZF. They're all very worthy contenders, but there used to be another camera that oozed style, build quality, engineering finesse, and some brilliant lenses. Yes, the Olympus Pen F. If you look at the specs, you probably wonder what all the fuss is about. It's only when you handle the Pen F and use it that you realize what Olympus did. When it's in your hands, it does genuinely feel like a premium quality, precision-made, metal-built camera from the days of film cameras. If it were still being made today, it would undoubtedly be one of the best OM system cameras of all. But a good used Olympus Pen F is hard to find. They do come up every now and then again on MPB, but very often they are in good condition rather than excellent, sport plenty of scuffs and dings, and cost around $1,000, which is about what they cost brand new in 2016. So why didn't I buy one then? A combination of caution and idiocy, I think. They looked expensive at the time, and there were cheaper and more practical Micro Four Thirds cameras in that range. Everyone was suspicious of the luxury MFT camera. Oh boy. But fast forward to 2024, and we've got a camera market obsessed with retro cameras. Whether they are new retro cameras, like Fujifilm X100 VI, or actually old digital cameras. I have the original Fujifilm X-T1 alongside an X-T5, and I'm impressed by how well these older cameras still work and handle. Very often, we don't realize how good a camera was until we see it in context some years later. So then he goes on and on. He talks a little bit about that it's only Micro Four Thirds and the smaller sensor compared to APS-C and full frame, but also that you get more compact lenses as a result. And then he goes down to, this is the last section here, do camera makers give up too soon, he asks. So why this swooning poem of praise for the Olympus Pen F? Because for all the new cameras that are released onto the market, we're also losing older cameras that didn't just capture digital images perfectly well enough, but were wonderful physical objects in themselves. I think Olympus was a victim of timing with the Pen F and indeed the whole Pen range. It anticipated a demand that didn't actually arrive until several years later, by which time the company had completely given up and walked away. So here's my advice. If there's a camera you once loved or once desired, and it doesn't have to be the Pen F, then don't delay. Find a good one and get it before it's too late. It was a nice waxing sort of piece about the Pen F. We've talked about the Pen F a ton here because I'm a big fan. Mine is still beautiful. It's still in great working order, and I still shoot with it. I don't shoot with it every day, but there are days when you go, you know what? I'm taking the Pen F today. And I do agree, it was a little early. It was a little early to the market. If that camera had come out now with updated specs, I think it would do very well. And actually, I'm really surprised that OM System seems so obsessed with this outdoor wildlife angle. Cameras built for, you know, taking pictures of birds and all that kind of stuff, which is fantastic. Micro Four Thirds is very good for that. But I feel like they have totally set aside the whole opportunity that is being seized by Fujifilm with the X100 series, by Leica with the Q series. And I think OM System could be right in there with an updated version of the Pen F. Make it weather sealed, update the sensor, update some of the other aspects of the camera. Oh my gosh, you would do so well. And especially since there are so many Micro Four Thirds lenses out there that people always have to do is get the camera and they're ready to go because they would already have all the optics for it. It's a lament and a love song all at the same time, but I thought it was kind of a cool article. And if you're a fan of this camera, I think you would enjoy it. And as I said, the link is in the show notes. Apple may use Samsung for iPhone cameras ending a longtime Sony run. And this is an article from The Verge, and I have a link to it in the show notes. Apple might start using Samsung camera sensors as soon as 2026, marking the end of Sony's decade-plus run as the sole supplier of the phone's camera sensors. The phones are expected to use Samsung-made 48-megapixel ultra-wide CMOS image sensors starting as early as 2026, according to supply chain analyst Ming-Chi Kuo. The rumor doesn't suggest whether Samsung will replace Sony for any other iPhone camera sensors. Although Apple doesn't usually talk about who makes its components, CEO Tim Cook said in 2022 that Sony had been its iPhone camera supplier for more than 10 years. Indeed, past reports have suggested that Sony sensors were used in iPhones like the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 8. Given software processing and Apple's preference for creating true-to-life images, the switch wouldn't mean that iPhone photos would suddenly look like they were taken with a Samsung phone. But if the rumor is true, 48 megapixels is a nice bump from, say, the iPhone 15 Pro's 12-megapixel ultra-wide and could mean more detailed shots. I think this is interesting because if the iPhone becomes more capable with some of the other lenses, let's say the wider lenses and so forth. When I mean more capable, more megapixels, more detail and so forth, then you start thinking about the iPhone also as a capture device for the Vision Pro. And you're going, okay, you know, these two things could work together better, more detail, more quality capture, which means better rendering on the Vision Pro, all that kind of stuff. And then for our general photography as well. So I think this is kind of fun. I would love to have 48 megapixels available to me across the board, no matter which camera I'm using. And if Samsung can provide that, I'm interested as well. We'll see what Apple does. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to start out with a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this community, this podcast, month in and month out. They have their dedicated space on Derek Story Online where they share pictures, ask questions, share stories, share successes, all of that good stuff. It is truly a 24/7 virtual camera club. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, and I don't see why you wouldn't be because it's so much fun, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, nose around a bit, see what you think, sign up, and then before you know it, you'll be getting an invite to the Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online, and you can join in all the fun. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this community. I want to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that supply the printing paper to make our beautiful fine art prints, our fine art greeting cards, our everyday prints, and just about anything else that we need to produce from an inkjet printer. They're also fully behind our upcoming inkjet printing workshop, and they are behind this podcast and this community as a whole. If you want to learn more about inkjet printing, I suggest you go to the site. If you need some paper, I suggest you go to their site. If you need anything in the world of inkjet printing, I suggest you go to the Red River Paper site, and you can get there by clicking on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. A big shout out to Red River Paper for supporting this community. And remember, they also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.